הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה ונשמחה. הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה, הווה נגילה ונשמחה. הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה ונשמחה. הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה, הווה נרננה ונשמחה. אורו אורו אחים, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים בלב שמח, אורו אחים, אורו אחים בלב שמח. Hello everybody, this is Judge Eve, and this was a Hebrew song which says, everybody wake up and be happy and sing because you're happy. So hopefully we bring you some happy news today. Let me just say, Lord, I humble myself before you and thank you that the meditation of my heart and the words of our mouth are pleasing in your sight, O Lord. I'm so pleased to have James Robert Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, as my guest today. I think he's very special and very courageous. He was a 32-degree Mason at a very young age. He's 31 now, so he'll tell us at what age he did that. And he came from a very prominent Texas family. His grandfather was a 33-degree Mason. And at a very young age, he became envoy to the Freemason Supreme Council in Washington, D.C. He then was also special assistant to the General Secretary, and I'm not sure if it's Washington or Texas. He'll let us know. He's a descendant of the Wiseman clan of Scotland and the Sicambian Franks, the St. Clairs, which I really want to hear about. And he has two books. I have the one book, which is already out, Freemasonry's Cult Abuses. And his second book is coming out in about a month, and it's Freemasonry's Filthy Rituals. And both can be obtained from New Falcon. That's www.new, the word new, opposite of old, Falcon, F like Frank, ALCON.com. Who we have to commend for their courage in publishing his story, because as he tells it to you, you'll understand. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you very much. Are you having a good morning?
I am. How about you?
Yes, very much so.
Okay. You know, I'm in the Seattle area, Washington, and we've been having sparkling, gorgeous weather. You know, you and I in Southern California, am I correct?
Yes.
If it's okay for you to disclose, I know you've been terribly persecuted. But James, tell us a little bit about your background. You were born in Texas, then you came from, as you say, a very wealthy, very society-type family. Is that right?
That is correct.
And what made you become a Freemason?
Well, it was sort of the normal, you know, par for the course in my family and others like ours. So when it came time, I did it, and I really enjoyed it from the get-go. It was, you know, much later after I rose to certain heights that it turned itself into a problem.
Because you had access to the records, right, which most people wouldn't have access to. Isn't that correct?
Oh, yes, I had pretty uninhibited access with everything, be that records, archives. I could request to go in the vault anytime I wanted. I mean, it was really nice, and, I mean, I tried to use that as good as I could to excel with my position. So it was more an issue of...
I was going to say, you sound like a type that whatever you do, you give your whole heart to. Aren't you?
Yes, I guess I'm guilty of that. That's very nice of you to say. Thank you.
But it's true.
Yeah, I really wanted to be devoted to it, and I was. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was something that was just, well, it was more than a job. It was a conviction and a belief system.
And a calling, it sounds like, right? You really felt you were serving a higher cause than just yourself. Isn't that part of what you felt when you were there?
Oh, yes. I mean, it felt really cool to be in a job profession that to me was depending on how you look at it, you know, about 2,000 years old.
Wow.
As a profession, so.
Yes, but you also trained, aren't you, in theater, and can you tell us a little bit about what your prior training was?
Yes, I originally, when I was a kid graduating high school, I was pretty confident that I wanted to go into technical theater, specifically stage management, and
oh.
I went to Stephen F. Austin University in Texas, and I got educated in tech theater, and I've worked professionally in it, but by
oh.
the time I was about 22, 23,
yes.
I was pretty much concluding that, you know what, this might have been fun as a kid, but it's not really something I want to make a career out of. So I
yes.
just sort of reassessed everything and then changed and kind of floated around for a little while before I got more into serious, you know, business type.
You know what's
settings.
Interesting?
So.
You don't have a Southern accent, and I'm wondering why.
Well, it's early in the day, and I haven't spoken with another Southerner yet. That tends to bring it out.
If I speak with a Hebrew accent, would that help you?
It would probably help to neutralize my Southern accent. Yeah. So,
you know,
I mean,
what
I've been here in L.A. now since
yes.
the end of February, so I suppose it's kind of died down in its intensity. So, but I can always fire out with, you know, so what are y'all fixing to do, or
exactly.
something like that.
Because when we came to America, I was born in Jerusalem. We lived in Charleston, South Carolina. And I was told by my cousin in New York how they speak so slowly, and they say, you all for this, and you all for that. And I didn't hear it till we moved to California, you know, a few months later. So.
Yeah.
Definitely a different
oh,
way of
people here speak. Still notice, yeah. And the thing about a Dallas accent
yes.
is it's actually pretty fast. So
oh, really?
It's almost kind of like an Atlanta accent.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that. Even regions within Texas, I guess it's such a big state, huh, that it varies.
Yeah, it really does, and
yes.
I mean, you get a whole mixture of things. It's pretty funny, actually. Have you ever seen the cartoon King of the Hill?
No, I haven't. Is that about
Yeah, Dallas? I don't know that it's still airing with new episodes, but there's this character in it called Boomhauer, and a lot of people think that he's just talking gibberish, but he's actually, I mean, I can understand it. He's speaking very precisely.
How funny.
That's one of the accents there. So.
You know, it's things that fascinate me, because by the way, have you ever heard of Manly Hall, you know, from this philosophical Reacher Society in Los Angeles and Los Feliz area? He was a Scottish
writer. Yes, I'm very
right.
familiar with Manly Hall.
Yeah, I had a lot of his books at the time, and you want to hear something? I was at that organization the day he passed away, and I am a seer, and I actually saw what I saw was what was Francis Bacon, you know, the English gentleman from the 1600s or 1500s. Do you know
yes,
who that
Rosicrucian,
is?
Yes, Rosicrucian, yes.
The Rosicrucian, right. I saw him wearing, you know, these accordion-like collars. And also, my friend and I, we went to his ceremony, for the funeral ceremony, whatever you call it, and we felt his presence. It was the weirdest thing, you know. Friends of my friend helped him health-wise. You know, he lived to be about 94 years old. And I always wondered, you know, what is he really talking about? You know, of course, I learned that there were Egyptian-type philosophy, which you address in your book. Again, Freemasonry, Cult Abuses is the one you already have out, and the other one is Freemasonry, Filthy Rituals. What I wanted to understand from you is, tell me why being part of the Wise Men Clan was important to become a Freemason.
Well, I don't think that I would have been disqualified or had anything turn out starkly different had I not been, but it certainly did help in the regard that there seems to be a unspoken theme in
yeah.
the higher ranks of Freemasonry that they really like to pull from those sort of backgrounds. And I'm not saying that there is some sort of organized effort or something to seek out people along a bloodline theme, but it is interesting to note that that always kind of happens anyway.
Wow.
And so
why
you know,
are
if you
special?
Ever walked into the...
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Why is the Wiseman clan special? And also I wanted to check on the other one, too. What is so special about that clan? And I'm talking because I'm ignorant about it.
Well, the Wisemans in particular, to the best of my knowledge, were sort of like land brokers back in the day, and they were responsible for a lot of large real estate deals with various facets of royalty, and they sort of intermingled with them and everything, and there were some marriages to some different royal houses and things like that. So, and then the Wisemans themselves were direct descendants of the St. Clairs, which I know there's a little bit of confusion when you say St. Clair or Sinclair. It's basically the same gene pool. However, when you say St. Clair, it's denoting the French background, and Sinclair is the Scottish. So,
and you said Sicambians, Franks. What does that mean? What does that represent?
The Sicambrian Franks are most commonly understood by people as that word Merovingian.
Yes.
So it would be the original rulers of Merovingian era France, the ones who would have settled Paris and all that.
And you know, very interestingly, because I've studied these things for years. I've studied everything you can imagine. You know, I'm a huge reader. Let me ask you this. You know, the Merovingians are the ones who are alleged to be descendants of Mary Magdalene, right? That Jesus allegedly got married and has all these descendants. Is that what they teach, or is that what they pass down through the generations?
Well, the Merovingian families, to the best of my knowledge, I've spoken with a lot of people who are that, and it seems like not a lot of information is passed down, period. It's sort of a path of research and discovery that you have to undertake, because I think I sort of conclude from all that these families have been so badly persecuted by, various wars
by
and like the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre and things like that.
I think
it became a very common theme in these families to just sort of not talk about it, blend in with the rest of society, move to a different continent, and get away from that. So,
why were they persecuted, James?
Well, that, I guess, has to do with various royal houses who one feels like they should be the rulers, and the other one feels the same, and maybe another one also feels the same, and so it turns into a bloodbath.
So the same old thing, right? Like why we have wars all the time.
Same old thing, yeah.
So, you know, I wanted to ask you this. You know, in your book you say, and it answered part of my question, my former father-in-law was a Cohen. That's my former name. And he was appointed to the grand jury in New York, and what I didn't know till he died, he was buried with a Masonic flag, which surprised me. Does that mean he was a high-level Mason? Do you know?
It means that he was, at the very least, a master Mason.
Yes.
So, yes, whether it was master or 32nd, 33rd, that doesn't really distinguish that. There would have to be some other sort of symbols or maybe something in a photograph, or jewelry, or something like that that you could tell.
Wow. Because what I...
Or you could always... where was he? Where did he live most of his life?
In New York, New York City. And he lived in Brooklyn, but he had a factory for samples, you know, like if you buy curtains or any materials, he would make the sample books. And he was quite wealthy.
What you could do, and anybody can do this that's looking to research Masonic connections in their family, you could contact, since he was in New York, you can contact the Grand Lodge of New York or the Scottish Rite Orient of New York. I don't know which valley would be appropriate as far as the city of one he could have possibly gone to, but you contact both of them and give them the name and the birth date and all that, and they'll be able to research it and send you back a basic readout of, yes, he belonged to this lodge, he belonged from this date to this date, and here were his honors. And then the Scottish Rite will be also be able to tell you whether or not he was a 32nd or 33rd.
Really? Wow. Because, you know, my understanding, and it's limited, is that usually Freemasons are very active in our government, right? They get their people appointed to very high levels so they can control what goes on, at least in our country. Am I correct in understanding that?
You are correct, yes.
That's why what you have to say is so important. And people, this is James Wright. Let me tell you how you get in touch with him. You are available for speaking, right, James, to disclose what's really good? Yeah, so you go, and you correct me, please, if I misstate anything. Facebook.com/, and then Occupy Freemasonry. So that would be OCCUPY, and then the word Freemasonry. FREEMASONRY. Another question I had, what is the difference between the Scottish Rite, which I know Manly Hall was a part of, and the York section? You mentioned it, and that's the first time I heard that.
Basically, whenever you're in your community level of masonry, so that's the Blue Lodge, the places that are around the corner and what have you, the Blue Lodge is answer to the Grand Lodge of that state, and that's all within the boundaries of the York Rite. Scottish Rite is...
Mm-hmm.
Scottish Rite is something that sort of appendently sprung up around 1890, thereabouts, and has really in the past 100 years taken over. But it's responsible for degrees 4 through 32 and then the 33rd.
Yeah.
So the Scottish Rite is certainly the big business end of it, but the mother of it all is centered in York Rite. And then, of course, most Masons don't realize that, because they're never told, and if they ask, they're lied to about this one point. They're told that there is no higher authority than the Grand Lodge of their state, and that's just not true. It's the Grand Lodge of England, and the Duke of Kent, Prince Edward, is your Grand Master.
Wow. So we technically still ruled by England, which, of course, I've read, right?
In a Masonic jurisdictional sense, yes, we are.
Yes. Was Francis Bacon a Mason? Do you know? You know, he's the one who was so active in, I forget which queen, Elizabeth Court? You know, allegedly her illegitimate son or something like that.
I believe he was. Now, let me just say that I may be wrong. I don't have his biography sitting in front of me, but I am familiar enough with it to know that when you look at all these orders, it doesn't matter. You can just pick one.
Yeah.
All of the founders always turn out to be Masons who, for whatever whatever reason in their time period, became disenfranchised one way or another with Freemasonry as an establishment, so they separated from it and went on to, you know, gather their friends, their other brothers, and so forth, and form these other orders. That's exactly how Rosicrucianism arguably was started. The connections there are a little vague, but certainly with OTO and Golden
Dawn. What is OTO, Order of the Orient, or something like that?
OTO stands for Ordo Templi Orientis, Order of the Temple of the East, and its founding member was a man named Theodore Royce, and it was founded a small group of Masons, and about 50 years later they came into contact with Freemason Aleister Crowley, who
was
sort
a Satanist, right?
Well, he claimed to be. Now, I've met scholars who will claim that that is debatable, and it's also debatable that he was only saying those things to simply garner extremely lucrative publicity for himself, albeit the negative kind.
Right.
But it seems like it worked.
Really?
Because
so
people
he was
still
a
buy
free...
his books.
He was a Freemason and a high level, a 33 degree Freemason.
Yes. Now, I'm sure the Masons would argue that they did not appoint him his 33rd degree,
yes.
that came from European strange factions or what have you, but it did
yes.
seem that he did have it, and he had,
you know,
last
couple
time
of
I read anything about Crowley, it seems like he had just about every highest attainable honor from every order, you know, in the ball game, so to speak, at that
yes.
time. So
yes, wow. I have a couple more questions, and I wanted you to tell us your story, but in part of it, it's your story. In your book, this is the Freemasonry Cult Abuses, which can be obtained from www.newfalcon.com. Wonderful, wonderful thing that they're doing to publish it. And it's page 58. You talk about the different degrees, and what amazed me, that the 30th degree is called Knight Kadosh, which is a Hebrew word. You know, it means holy night, you know, K-N-I-G-H-T. Did you know that?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
How did they get that Hebrew word into it?
Well, if you only do York right and you run that to its limit, then
yes.
you arrive at the degree of Knight Templar, whereas
yes.
the Scottish Rite claims in its history and etymology that if you do their system on that 30th degree, Knight Kadosh is still the same as Knight Templar, and the history and the degree is the story of the Templars, and
yeah.
it's kind of where you get the name Scottish Rite from. It doesn't really
oh.
denote that. People get confused and they think, okay, well, they must all be Scotsmans or something
yeah.
over there at that place. Well, no, actually, all it refers to
yeah.
is the purge of the Templars in 1307, they went
wow.
and they sought amnesty with Robert Bruce of Scotland.
Right.
And so that's sort of where the Templars fled to, and they assimilated themselves with the system of Freemasonry, which, when Freemasonry says publicly that it began in 1717 in London, that's not true. And
right.
they later say that that's not true, but to the public, it's always been 1717, and
wow.
It's a bit of a stretch.
And also, your family's descendant, right, from the Templars, the ones who actually went to the Holy Land before they were banned or banished from France and the Pope. Am I saying it correctly?
Yes. When I compiled my genealogy and all that, those connections came out very clearly.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you one more thing. The letter G, which you say the Masons say is God or the Great Master and all that. I've read a lot of books by David Icke, I-C-K-E. Are you familiar with his books?
Yes, I know David Icke.
Yeah, you know. Oh, you know him. Okay, I've talked to him. I've not met him. You know, he talks about the reptilians, you know, being the ones behind so much what's going on in the world. And one thing he said in one of his books is that the alleged reptilians, I see in the spirit realm, but I've not seen reptilians, okay? But he says they cannot take the sound of the hard G. That's why when I saw you make a big deal of it in your book, I thought, I got to find out. What does it mean? What does it mean to the Masons? Besides the cover-up explanation.
Well, publicly they say it stands for God, Gnosis, and Geometry.
Yes.
So they go further to say that it's one of the ineffable letters of the name of deity, but that's not accurate. I mean, when you study those, even in their own higher degrees, 32, it's, well, even the 18th, Knight Rose Croix, for that matter, it makes it pretty clear that, you know, the G doesn't really factor in. I think the last time you even see the letter G is maybe in the 7th or 8th degree
oh.
or something like that. So
uh-huh.
it's, I don't know. It just, to me, it's sort of more of that sort of face value pageantry that Freemasonry
yeah.
employs as an establishment, and it's sort of counterproductive to members that are there that are staunch esoteric Masons trying to pursue a higher learning in
yes.
the esoteric. It's just, it's leading down a road that goes nowhere when you focus on that letter G. There is no point, because what it represents, it sits in the master station in the east in every lodge. And
yes. But it has no secret meaning.
It's a symbol of the bright, blazing star of the east, the morning star.
Wow.
Of course, that's
wow.
also synonymous with Lucifer.
Exactly.
That is true.
Yes.
But
interesting. So go ahead. Tell us then what happened, because from what you say, it sounded like Freemasonry was just a money-making proposition, trying to get people to go from one level to the other and pay more and more money. Is that what you learned, or what did you learn?
Well, yeah, I think it's important to state that I really do feel that Freemasonry has its foundation a really
yes.
good system that people can benefit from and that can enrich their lives and enrich the communities, just like it claims. But the problem,
yes.
Problems, plural, is when you get into very vain egos who come into it and start abusing the system as a self-aggrandizing and glorifying to the self mechanism, and their focus becomes then on getting power, retaining power, and immortalizing
yeah.
themselves in plaques and paintings and statues and things like that, when it just totally
wow.
cheapens the order and the whole point of being there. I mean, I know that this may shock some people that
yeah.
Are from that environment and think that I'm just the devil for the stuff I'm doing now and speaking out
no,
about
you're
it.
Not.
But
no, you're not. God bless you for what you're doing. And people, you need to know that James has been persecuted horribly. You know, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's been done to you, what you have had to do with the FBI? People need to hear what's going on.
Well, they've really taken it upon themselves to threaten me in virtually every way imaginable, every form imaginable. I've had to basically flee Texas
wow.
because that's where they are headquartered, and life just became too unbearable there. They made it that way.
You and had to keep moving,
make no
right?
mistake, this did not happen yeah. after... Only after I came out and wrote the book and started speaking publicly, oh no, this all started the day that I separated from that environment. And it's
really
been the same every day. My picture is taken every day by private investigators that follow me.
Wow.
It's really ridiculous.
Yeah. They didn't want you to disclose what's really going on there. Is that the reason?
I don't think they knew what to think, because this has not happened really
yeah.
as far as what happened with me and my experience and all that. It's
yeah.
never really happened in the history of that order. The closest thing that would come to it would
yes.
be William Morgan and the whole Morgan affair of 1826.
What was that? I'm not familiar with that.
It's a man, and it was a guy from Batavia, New York, and he had a disenfranchisement. It's not clear as to the reasons why, but he separated himself from the environment and
oh.
he began work on a book, and
yeah.
they found out about this, and he was imprisoned several times
wow.
within the context of about a month. And then one day when he was exiting the door of the jail, because he was in there on superfluous charges anyway, and
yes.
so he's walking out, and a horse-drawn carriage pulls up in front of a street full of witnesses, and known Masons from his lodge jump
yes.
out, pull him in, they whisk him off, and he's never seen from again. They killed him.
Oh, my. So tell me, you know, you became 32-degree level Mason, right?
Yes.
And you felt each step of the way you were just being, like, teased with what can happen at a higher level. And from what I understand, you never really learned much of anything. Am I correct in my understanding?
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, it's, yeah, the goal is always to make you want to come back and get more, which
yes.
I mean, I'm sorry, there's other jurisdictions on the planet that would argue that and say that, you know, each person doing it needs to really take a lot of time with each of those degrees and really learn them, really understand them and research them and everything else. And I've got to say, I kind of tend to agree with that because if it's all done on an assembly line, then what are you learning? Nothing. Yeah, exactly.
What do they allegedly teach? Why, you started at the first degree when you first joined the Freemasons?
Yes.
And then you say they really rush people through, like every year they advance you to another level. But do you have you learned anything? Was there anything of substance that they do teach people? Let's say at the lower levels they cover up the truth. But what do they teach them at the lower levels?
Well, it's just a bunch of one-act play-styled philosophical allegories. I mean, they don't ultimately teach you hardly anything. You're coming in, you take each degree, and after the degree, there's always a sort of a lecture that follows. And, you know, you're talking about the time span of maybe 45 minutes for the ritual itself and about another 45 minutes to an hour for the lecture that follows. It's always done with an old slide projector and all this. And they
like
show you some pictures and they read off some talking points that are uniform in every lodge, and that's it. And then you're expected.
What are the rituals? You know, what I'm interested is in the signs and handshakes, and you know, allegedly, you know, Pat Robertson, you know, he's a Christian, allegedly was said to have Masonic statement. You know, the way he held his lapel or something. What do these hand symbols or rituals consist of, and what do they mean?
But really, there's just the handshakes and the passwords that go along with them. And
can you say any of them? Are you allowed to say?
Well, sure. I don't see any reason why. I have this belief that there's no point in concealing secrets. There's just not.
Good.
If all of humanity cannot share in the same knowledge, then, I mean, what good is it? So, yeah, I mean, like the first degree, the password is Boaz.
And the reason?
And
Boaz was a biblical figure, you know?
Well, there's one for the first degree, and then there's what they call a pass grip and password, and then the grip and word for the second degree and the third degree. So to run through the passwords, start to finish, you'd say Boaz, Shibboleth, Jochen, Tubal-Cain, Mahabon.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, Cain, not Tubal-Cain, but Cain, you know, was in the Bible. Tubal, I think, is a biblical name also. And what is the reason for these passwords? What do they show or what do they establish?
Nothing.
Just a way of getting...
If you're waiting for me to pull something out of a hat, I mean, that's you'd be in the same shoes as every Mason taking the degrees.
Wow. How sad. Tell me what you found to be abuses and rituals. You know, like I advertised it as blood rituals and other abuses. What did you discover? Because you had access to the archives. By the way, were you assistant secretary to the secretary in Texas or in Washington, D.C.?
Texas.
So what did you discover that you found to be horrible?
Overall, a attitude of elitism, racism, sexism, homophobia. I mean, you name it, it's practically in place there. Freemasonry is, after all, the only institution left in America that still gets away with practicing segregation. What with
the
Prince Hall lodges? It's clearly they don't allow women, which to me makes no sense because every other initiatory order under the sun does and
forced to, right?
I don't get the attitude. I really don't. Like the fact that you have to take these blood oaths. Again, no other initiatory society in the world requires such murderous tones to their, and I know what it's for. It's to promote a culture of fear and obedience.
Ah, like you say, they teach conformity, conformity, conformity is what you were saying in your book, The Freemasonry Cult Abuses, right?
Yes.
So the way you control people is to keep them to conform to whatever rules you set up. And you see, James, you were too intelligent for them. That's their problem. You know, you were able to analyze what they were doing, and you say, you know, it's like the emperor's new clothes. Do you know that story?
Remember? Yes.
How he gets these clothes makers to make him clothes, and then finally they give him nothing, and he goes in the street, and everybody says, oh, how wonderful, and the little boy says, oh, but he's naked. So what you say, so you're exposing their emperor's new clothes, right? I know the blood oaths you have in your book, which really are horrifying, but what have you observed or what have you learned about rituals that they follow that have been horrific?
Well, that's the key thing that is. I mean, look, I don't think that an initiatory society is all bad. I think there are good things that could come of it. There's certainly others out there that enjoy long, healthy, fruitful careers and don't have these sort of problems come up. I think
yes.
Problems start with the attitude with all the dark elements.
Yes.
And there's been Masons who have attacked me and said, well, you know, how could you do this? You know, you're breaking growth and you're, you know, like, I'm not conforming. How dare you? And
yes. Exactly.
I always say to them, well, now wait a minute, let's look at this from historical eyes here. Freemasonry has always, always, always been behind every major rebellion and revolution known to our civilization. So
really?
Did this attitude come about that you're supposed to conform and goose-step? I don't get this.
Yeah, I did not know. Were they behind the French Revolution, do you know?
Oh, God, yes.
Because, you know, they really follow the Illuminati then, right? The Freemasons do?
Yes, that was at the time of the historical context of the Order of the Bavarian Illuminati. And they were all sort of handed, because there again, the Illuminati of Bavaria would have been another order that was formed by disenfranchised Masons. It always starts that way.
Adam Weishaupt, right, who's supposed to have been a Jew, I think, who became Christian, or Christian who became a Jew, you know. Because, see, my observation has been that usually there are Jewish people behind all of these activities, you know, like when you read about the revolution in Russia, you know, the communist revolution. Lenin was a Jew, you know, Marx was, I'm not sure if he was a Christian or became a Jew, Stalin was half Jewish, and then I wonder how is all of that connected, you know, with the Freemasons or the Illuminati?
All it takes is two, I suppose, if you have one who is and another who is, and they communicate on that level of secrecy between them and have that ability to network further, then I mean, you've got one up on anybody else.
Yes.
Trying to do something similar, so.
So you mean it's just trying to be secret, like what they've always, you know, I remember even Manly Hall talking about how everything was so secret, and he was allegedly exposing the secrets of the ages. You know, I've read a lot of his books. So he, too, you know, when I would hear him talk, you know, like on tapes, it sounded like it was just talking and talking and talking and not saying anything. Do you feel the same way? Have you heard any of his lectures?
I've never listened to any audio tape lectures, no. I've read the books, but that would be fascinating, though.
It was because he had a very boring manner of speaking, you know, like sitting on a stage and talking, and I kept thinking, why do people go to listen to that, you know? Again, if you're in L.A., you know where the Philosophical Research Society is on Las Feliz?
I do not. No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. If you look on the computer, I think you can see it. They're on the way to Glendale, and they have a huge library. So I don't know if you'd be interested in it. Because one other thing that you do, James, that really touches me, is that you seek out other former Masonic brethren who've been abused, and you try to help them. What have you been doing in that regard?
Well, there's one situation in a different southern state that And I'm not going to go into detail because it seems that any time it comes up, it really causes more bad things to happen to this guy. And right now, it's gone to such an extreme with these guys persecuting him. Simply because it all goes back to him coming out of the closet as a gay man the year he was worshipful master of his lodge. And that's it. That's all he did. And yet they have all gotten together and performed their character assassinations, which is very typical in Masonic environments. And
what
they've taken it to such an extreme that they've actually had this guy brought up on real charges in a real court of law, alleging theft and all kinds of stuff. And it's so ridiculous. There's no basis to any of it in reality, but this guy is having to spend a lot of time and money and all sorts of things to fight this. And it's just them. It's a bunch of guys, frankly, with too much time on their hands are acting out a policy of hate on someone because they're bored and they're out of control.
Now, are the people who do that, the persecutors, are they very wealthy people? Are they who are they as a rule, without identifying, in detail who they are?
If they're not wealthy, then they're well connected. So in this case with him, a lot of them are sheriffs in the county that he resides in. There's a judge in the mix. There's it's really something, and I mean, he's had it far worse than I ever did. So,
James, I'm so sorry.
And I keep telling him to go public with it, and he won't do it. And
he's afraid.
I've been trying to convince him that it would be protecting yourself. It would shine a light on how stupid these guys are acting and how ridiculous it all is, and they'd probably lay off, but we have a difference of opinion, so.
Yeah, I agree with you. Plus, the two of you are stronger than just him alone, and secondly, discovery is always half of victory. You know, if you cover things up, the bad people get away with doing even more and more stuff, so I agree with you 100%. You know, they may...
There's weird cases of this type of stuff happening all over the country. There's, I know a guy in New York State who decided that he was going to not be going back to his lodge anymore because he said the last two times he went, fist fights broke out. Because, guys are struggling over who gets what title. And it's also silly.
You're kidding. And the Masonic is supposed to be charitable, right? That's what you said? They pretend to be charitable? Pardon me?
Yes, it's supposed to be.
Yes, and have you discovered otherwise?
Well, they do charity. That's not really debatable, but you have to ask yourself, to what degree do they do it? If this is what the place is focused on and built around, then, all I have to say about that is ask any Masonic body to open up its books. It's going to tell you, no, absolutely not. Well, there's a reason.
And why? What is the reason?
Well, because then people would really see that the amount of charity, if a lodge has $1 million in the bank, let's say, and every year they only donate about $1,000 or $2,000, that's kind of an imbalance.
Wow. What happens to the rest of the money? What do they do with it?
Oh, they sit on it and they endlessly debate what to do with it, and you'll never see a more ridiculous environment of people that get together and have meetings about having meetings.
That is so funny. In other words, total waste of time for everybody involved, right?
Oh, completely. Yes, my mother lodge, I quit going to it and started going to one in downtown Dallas when I was doing all that, just because it was so extreme there. I was bored. I was bored to tears, and I kept asking myself, why do I need to show up this week? I already know how it's going to go. They're going to sit around and talk about everything we need to accomplish the next week.
Yeah. It's like a speech, right? That's what I'm going to talk about, so I talk about it, and then I tell you what I talked about, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, and, of course, always talk about themselves, too. You can't forget that.
Tell us two things that I wanted to know. You say, of course, that they encourage, once somebody becomes a member, they sort of push themselves on that member to give free services, which really is shocking to me. Have you found that to be
yes,
okay?
Yes. Now, whether that's between Masons or not, I mean, if one Mason is asking his brother, you know, I need your help with this, you're an electrician, come hang a chandelier, something like
yes.
that, then, of course, they're probably going to pay him. But if it's
yes.
for a lodge or a Masonic
yes.
function of any sort, or yes, it's expected to be free.
Wow. You know, the one other thing I really want to understand more is that book, The Morals and Dogma, which you say is not available. What is that, like a Bible from Freemasonry, or what is it, and what does it provide?
It's a book written by Confederate General Albert Pike, and
yes.
it's sort of, I mean, he would be the sort of demigod, so to speak, figure of Scottish Rite Masonry. He's the one that took a loose grouping of degrees of shadowy origin and assimilated them into the 4 through 32 system.
Wow.
And
yes.
so he writes this book, Morals and Dogma, really studied, well-read ritualists will be able to discern that Morals and Dogma is really no different than Dogma et Rituel by Eliphas Levi.
It's, who is he?
There's some people who argue that it's a direct plagiarism, but that's neither here nor there. The point is that it was a big deal. It is sort of it's all the substance of the Scottish Rite, and it's been out of print for over half a century.
Yes.
Interestingly, they just now
yes.
reissued a printing of it, but they've gone and abridged it. So they've taken what was originally about a 2,500-page book and
yes.
made it about 500 pages, and they've
wow.
cut out a lot of this stuff, like I'm sure every time the word Lucifer comes up and all that,
yes.
to try and clean it up.
Wow.
And help clean up their image, and it's just more of the usual with them.
Wow. By the way, we have a caller. Are you there, caller?
Hi, Judge Eve, and hi, James. This is Nikki Van Valkenburg.
Hi.
Thank you so much for the information that you're sharing. I really appreciate it.
Can you hear her, James? James,
yes.
can you hear her?
Thank you, Nikki, yes.
Yes, go ahead, please, Nikki.
So many of us have been touched by Freemasonry with having family and friends in that organization, and it really appears that they are kind of covert, and that initially you think that this is a very humanitarian organization, very, very people-oriented, very helping children in Shriners hospitals, things like that. But when you take a closer look, you see that they're trying to lead people into worshiping other gods, and then ultimately leading up to worshiping Lucifer, and that's a big concern.
Do you have any comment about that, James?
Absolutely. I mean, you're right, it is a concern, and it's something that, like, as far as the Scottish Rite Children's Hospitals or the Shriners Hospitals, it's really kind of in name only, because when you, again, if you inspect where the donations come from and everything, the Masons may send 1,000 or 10,000 in a novelty check each year at some ceremony, but the other millions and millions all come from wealthy private benefactors who are not Masons in any way. And so it's a PR stunt, really.
And again, really, as Nikki says, covert and leading people to Lucifer worship. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, they certainly open the door. They
yeah.
don't. They never come to you and say you're going to worship Lucifer or we worship Lucifer or anything like that, because they don't specify anybody that
yeah.
they worship. They just say that, you know, you pick your own god, and as long as it's one, you pick it. That's fine with us. And
yeah.
from
That's
that
funny.
Path on forward, I mean, it's interesting to note that in any of the Masonic degrees, in any of their books like Morals and Dogma, which I just mentioned,
yeah.
there is not one god or deity ever named except one, which is Lucifer. So
wow.
Isn't it true that once you get up to the 33rd degree, that's when the blinders are off, and that they reveal that you really do worship Lucifer? Is that how it goes?
In a manner of speaking, yes. I mean, I should note, I'm not a 33rd degree now. I was able to sit in on some degree rehearsals for it because of the nature of my job there and having tasks related to my job inside the opera house. But if you get to 33rd, unless you just come in the doors and you buy it, you donate $1 million, they're
wow.
so happy they're going to give you that 33rd within your first year there. It's rare, but it does happen, especially with celebrities, it happens.
Wow.
And but otherwise, by the time you get there, you're going to have experienced their stuff, the good and the bad, so much. You're going to be so well acquainted with it and who the negative personalities are around the place that, yeah, you're going to have a good, clear grasp that everything is not quite as it seems. And it's interesting that, you know, a lot of Masons who ever just do Blue Lodge, they don't really see these problems. It's kind of the scandal and the abuse sort of centers around the Scottish Rite.
Wow. Nikki, thank you so much for calling. You have a great day.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Jane, we only have a few minutes left. Is there anything that's on your heart? Let me first say about your two books, the one that's already out, Freemasonry Cult Abuses, which I found fascinating, and another one coming out in a month, Freemasonry's Filthy Rituals, both published by New Falcon Publications. And like we say, they had the courage to do that because of the persecution that they could be subjected to. And to reach James for speaking engagements, it's facebook.com/Occupy Freemasonry. And James, what would you like to say that's on your heart?
The site Occupy Freemasonry, all one word, because they've already created a mock site to try and pull people away. It has like an underscore or something between the words. So
thank you.
That's
thank
not
you.
It.
Okay, good. This is happening a lot.
All one word.
Okay, yeah, that's happening
oh, yeah.
a lot to deceive people. So thank you for correcting me, and please tell us what it is that you really wish to carry forth as your message.
My message, really, the substance of it is as follows. It is my conclusion from all my time spent there and as in-depth as I took it. Because I became a 32nd, and then I went on beyond that onto the Scottish Rite Research Society, doing the Master Craftsman Program, and all of this really hardcore, advanced degree in ritual study and historical concepts and all that.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating stuff. Just because I separated from that environment does not mean I've separated from the subject matter. I still read about it and
Good.
Do my own research on my own time.
Good.
And it's my conclusion that Freemasonry and the things that are wrong with it and the things that are the abuses that come up as a result of the things that are wrong with it cannot be fixed from the inside, because to fix it from the inside in the proper way it prescribes means that these power-hungry, intoxicated men who are in whatever lofty seats would have to the concept of change really threatens them because they don't want to adapt, they don't want to be made to feel that their power is lessening or one of them might have to go away or, you know, relinquish his chair or anything of that nature. So they're never going to allow it. It's just not.
Yeah.
I've already tried.
I've already tried to
pursue diplomatic solutions in the order properly, quietly, and they want nothing to do with it. So
it's going to
have to be fixed from the outside.
And you know what's coming to me, James? You should run for office. You're such a good speaker, and you know what's going on, and you do it on your own and show them it doesn't have to be their way, right?
Thank you. That's a very lovely compliment. Very flattered by it. Maybe now that I'm here in California.
Yes, you'll be perfect. I thank you so much for appearing today, for the information. And again, people, get his books. You need to know what's really going on and who is really controlling our country, and we need to stand up against it. God bless you, James. Thank you so much, and I really wish you all the best, and I'll be praying for your protection.
Oh, thank you so much, Eve. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. God bless you.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye, James. Hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom aleichem, hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem. Edenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem.